The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So when I was here a few weeks ago, I started exploring that so much of our suffering happens because of our relationship to experience. And I talked about that those relationships we have with experience are like additions to what's actually happening in the present moment. So we have, you know, something happening, and then we have our responses to that. We like it, we don't like it, we get angry or frustrated or confused. We start wanting more of it, we want to get rid of it. So that all of that is like extra in our experience. And that extra is where so much of our suffering lies. That's where a lot of our suffering is created. Now, there is the kind of objective unpleasantness of certain experience. So that's not going to go away by simply not adding anything. You know, that as we explore what it means to not be caught by what we add, actually that's a big piece of it, to not be caught by what we add, as we explore opening to what's actually happening right now. You know, there's sensations happening right now, there's sights happening right now, and smells and body sensations and thoughts and moods, and all of that's happening right now. And some of it's pleasant and some of it's unpleasant. And that's just what's given. We can have a relationship with that that is at ease without adding anything extra, without greed or aversion or confusion added as extra. There's a way in which even when things are unpleasant, the mind can be at ease. That does the mind being at ease doesn't mean that we won't act. I think that's something that we are confused about. It's like, well, if I'm completely at ease, why would I do anything? But what seems to happen is that when we're completely at ease, our heart is responding and resonating with what's happening in the world and very naturally wanting to act to support well-being for others, to support well-being for ourselves, to alleviate suffering for ourselves and in the world. And so this place of ease with what is happening doesn't mean that we stop acting. It doesn't mean that we think what's happening is good or right. There may be, our heart can be open and not suffering, not fighting around injustice in the world, not hating people or wanting to lash out around injustice or suffering in the world, but rather when the heart is letting go of what it's added around reacting to injustice in the world, that heart will more naturally step into responding in the world, responding from compassion and kindness and wisdom. And it's interesting because that may sound like something that's added to, and we can certainly work to cultivate those states of compassion and kindness. And in that work to cultivate, it's like we are adding, we're inclining our minds towards those states. And yet, the other side of what happens as we let go of what's been added, the reactivity that's added, as the heart lets go of greed, of aversion, of confusion, what's revealed there is not a heart that is just sitting there, not reacting to any, not responding to anything. But the heart that's revealed kind of naturally inclines towards compassion and kindness and wisdom. And so it's kind of an interesting paradox that when we release, when we let go of these additions that create so much suffering, the way we navigate the world is very different. It may look like we've added something, but it's really the releasing of greed, aversion, and delusion that allows us to take our place in this world with compassion and kindness. In a natural way, it's a natural response as the heart has released that constriction. And so today I'd like to explore some other things that we add, things that kind of get in the way of really just recognizing this is what's actually happening in the present moment. So our reactivity is one area of additions in our experience. And another area of additions, it's not necessarily so much in the realm of emotion, but it's in the realm of views. The ways that we orient to relate to our experience. Views, beliefs, opinions. This realm is what I'd like to explore today. There's so many different ways that views, beliefs kind of come into play in our lives. We have our own personal views of who we are, of what we're capable of what we think we need to do, of who we think we need to be. And often these are, based on who we think we need to be, who we think we are, sometimes based on our relationship with others and our beliefs, our views about what we think others need to believe about us. And so this is one whole area, what I'll call our own personal views. And then there's also views in this terrain, often that come not just from our own personal, well, actually all of our views, whatever we have in our system, it's not just coming in a vacuum solely because we are living here in this body, but it's because we're in a particular culture, we're in a particular family, we are conditioned. The views of our family tend to be the views that we adopt for ourselves. The views of our culture tend to be the views that we adopt for ourselves. And so many different subcultures we have, the subculture of being male or female or transgender or queer, or the culture of being educated or working class. There's so many different cultures that we connect with and are informed by, and so many views of those cultures that become kind of the subterranean way that we navigate the world. A lot of our family views can come into play in terms of what we think is normal. What we think of as the way it's supposed to be, what we think of as right or wrong, what we think of as good, as bad. You know, our family influences that, and our families are influenced by our culture. And so many of these views, because they're kind of subterranean, they're in the subconscious level, we don't recognize that we're walking through the world operating with this perspective And we're unaware of just how strongly that perspective influences how we meet the world. So these views are kind of like a filter. They're kind of like we've put on glasses of certain color. You know, when you wear sunglasses, when you first put them on, it's pretty clear that you're seeing through a different color. And you can tell that the world is a little darker. But if you wear them for a long time, you begin to forget, in a way, that you're wearing them. So it's like your mind adjusts to the fact that it's wearing these glasses, and it just thinks it's seeing the colors the way they are. I know that when I wear my sunglasses, I really prefer, in a way, when I take them off, it's like, oh, I thought things were really more orangey, and you know, the colors of the sunset were way more cool with my sunglasses on. You know, we take in what's coming in through that filter, and we lose track that there is that filter there. And so this is an area where we need to start taking care. Views themselves are not necessarily or inherently a problem. You know, we need views. We need views to navigate our world in a way. And yet, with them being subterranean, with the views about what's happening, in you know, the views of how we're supposed to be in the world, what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad. When we're not aware of those as views, then we can start bumping up against other people's views and have conflict about different views, different beliefs of what's right, of what's wrong, of what's good, of what's bad. There's one text. So it's not the views themselves that are bad, but kind of or not the views themselves that are problematic, I should say, but it's more that the unawareness that they are views, and the perspective that we have that this is truth, this is the way it's supposed to be, this is right, and that's not seen, that is a place where suffering can be created. So when we are attached to our views, and often we are attached to views that we are not aware of are there. Sometimes we can get to see. I've had the privilege to be able to travel in different cultures, to go to Burma, to travel in other countries, and really get to see some of my cultural beliefs, my perspectives about how people are supposed to interact. You know, how close you stand to somebody, and how much eye contact you make, and whether you shake hands or not. So many different little small things that we just assume are the way people interact, and very radically different culture to culture. And so it's not, again, these views of how a culture, how people interact, it's useful to kind of have a shared agreement about how we move through the world. And yet, to kind of, when we take that to be what's right or what's normal or what's good, then we can start butting up against each other. Because even in this country, in this culture here, there are so many different subcultures that have different ways of navigating the world. So I'll just say this one piece. There's a text, one of the Buddha's sayings, around views. And it's pointing to the fact of the clinging is at issue. The views themselves are not problematic, but when we hold to them and believe they're right or believe this is the way it's supposed to be, that's where the struggle begins, both in ourselves and in the world. You know, this attaching to views in this way creates an internal struggle when our views are not mirrored in the world, and it can create an external struggle if we're trying to force our views on the world. And so this is what the Buddha had to say. Those attached to views roam the world offending people. This is the way we are. He pointed to this attachment to views as being one of the primary sources of conflict in the world, of war. So this is worth looking at. It's worth looking at how do we add views in our experience. And this is not a simple thing to see because, as I said, so many of our views just come to us through, it's like we absorb them through living with our families, through living with our cultures. We absorb these views. It's not that people sit down and tell you, this is how close you stand to somebody, this is how much eye contact you make, this is what you do when you meet somebody like this, this is what you do when you meet somebody like that. It gets absorbed by being in the swim of it. So it's often not consciously stated as thought in our minds. It's essentially what's comfortable. We learn what's comfortable a lot of the times with our views. There are some views, of course, that are more conscious, but a lot of our views are more subterranean. And I'm just thinking, right now I'm just thinking about the ways, even when views are conscious, so there's the issue of having the subconscious views and the being unaware that we even have views. That's one way in which conflict can begin. Two people come up against, two people come together and they have different subconscious views and they start meeting and they've got different perspectives of what's right, of what's wrong. Different perspectives of how they should be together. And that can create some tension. It creates discomfort. It creates struggle if we're not curious about, this is interesting. This person is behaving differently. Let's explore this. But if instead there's a sense of this person is weird or this person is doing things wrong, then we can create suffering for ourselves and for the other person. So this is a way in which our subconscious views can create struggle. And then there's, even the conscious views, which are so out there in our political system right now, in our primaries, the way the candidates are speaking, views are so strongly stated. And they're conscious. It's clear that they're conscious. They're being articulated. And yet that this is where the attachment and the certainty that this is right, this is the way this country should go, this is what we need to do, that certainty, that attachment, as the Buddha said, those attached to views roam the world offending people. So both the views that are underground and the views that we hold consciously, it's worth looking at. It's worth exploring. What are these views? So I'd like to explore a little bit more, kind of in a simple way, perhaps, ways that views, even simple views, lead to suffering. I mentioned a little bit about this, but anytime we are suffering, anytime there's any kind of struggle in our experience, a feeling like this isn't right, or we're angry, or confused about something, or we really want something, you know, anytime we experience any kind of reactivity, some kind of view is operating. You know, we think in a way of, you know, well, something's unpleasant, of course we react. You know, that's just what I do. If this kind of thing happens, I get angry. Associated with that experience, with that arising of anger, is some kind of view. Maybe one of the simplest, I'll go through two really, really simple views. When we're suffering, often a view, one of the simple views associated with a situation when we're suffering, it's not supposed to be like this. So associated with that view, it's not supposed to be like this. It can be some kind of underlying belief or meaning that we're also connected to or believing. If it's like this, perhaps, you know, it's like, so it's not supposed to be like this. And if it is like this, it means, for myself in some of the simple ways that I've run up against struggle. Let's think about personal struggle right now, because this ripples out, the issues around views ripple out into the whole of our culture and the ways that we treat each other. Just a simple perspective of, oh, you know, okay, a sense of a feeling of frustration around something. It's like, okay, it's not supposed to be like this. If it is like this, it means what? For me, I'm a failure, perhaps. It means I'm not lovable. It means I didn't try hard enough. Or perhaps it means somebody else is to blame. So there's these views or perspectives that are underneath this kind of sense of, oh, it's not supposed to be like this. If it is like this, it means I'm not as good. I didn't try hard enough. And so that we kind of pick up on that underlying belief or meaning, and there's an identification under there often. So that's sometimes where the struggle or the suffering happens. So for me, you know, in my experience, it's like, okay, you know, something's happening and it's not the way I think it's supposed to be. And often one of the first things I'd go to is I'm a failure. And that, you know, it's like, it's not supposed to be that way. So clearly there's something wrong. And where is the wrong? It's me. And that feeling of wrongness, it's like that became an identity. It's like, I'm bad, I'm a failure. And there's a lot of suffering in that. We can also project that outwards onto others. Like some of us tend to take the blame into ourselves. Others will tend to say, it's your fault. You know, you're the one that's wrong, or you're the one that's bad. And then we make other. So we create a sense of, you know, division, essentially. Either way, we're creating a sense of division. Either way, it's like, here I am. I'm a failure. Clearly, everybody else can do this. Everybody else knows how to navigate the world, but I'm a failure. Or, you're doing it wrong. So this kind of one way, another way to explore this is to check in. Is there a sense of othering, you know, are you driving the blame outwards? Are you driving the blame inwards, selfing and othering? Again, if there's suffering, there's some kind of you happening. Often something that is not so clearly seen. This view of myself as being a failure, for instance, I didn't clearly see that and how pervasive it was until I started meditating. Because I was attached so strongly to the opposite view that I'm a success. I can navigate the world. I'm good at things. So I was really attached strongly to that one. But the subterranean view is when, you know, when I obviously, you know, we can't always have things go our way. And when the world proved to me that I was not always a success, the subterranean pattern of being a failure became strong. So there were these kind of balanced views. You know, at least one side is like, yeah, I'm good at this. The other side, oh, I'm a failure. I'll talk about that more in just a minute. So, the views of it's not supposed to be like this, and the subsequent repercussions around that. Along with that, so just to take it outwards into the world a little bit, it's not supposed to be like this around injustice, around so much of the suffering in this world, which is human perpetuated, you know, how do we relate to that and the view that it's not supposed to be like that? Because it seems so true that it's not supposed to be like that. So this is an area again to begin to explore the view and what meanings we connect to that view and what follows on from that view. So following on from a view of there's not supposed to be this injustice in the world, there's kind of like different ways we can navigate that. If we are clinging to that view and are blaming either other or ourselves somehow, I'm not doing enough, or these people shouldn't be doing that. So if we go into blaming mode around this, it's not supposed to be like that, around injustice, then what tends to follow from that is hatred and actions that follow from hatred. So that's one way. If we are operating from that view with this division and blaming, we can also know that view, hold that view, recognize, yes, this injustice creates suffering in the world. Not so much with blame that somebody else is doing something wrong or I'm not doing enough, but recognizing that the entirety of human patterning has been conditioned from the beginning of the human species. I mean, we can trace the conflict that's in this world today back hundreds of years, thousands of years. So what's happening today, it's not just about now, it's about a whole set of unfolding conditions. And, you know, we don't know I mean, if one thing I reflect on sometimes, you know, it's like, and there's actually been some experiments around the atrocities that happened in Nazi Germany. You know, we might think, I would never go along with that. How could they do that? But we don't know what would happen to us if we had been in that situation. So we don't know. There's a famous old study that was done here at Stanford University, where a researcher, Philip Zimbardo, created two groups of students, and they were going to have this prison experiment, created a group of prisoners and a group of guards, and created this like mock prison in the basement of the psychology building at Stanford. And within, I think, less than 2 days, I think it was within a day and a half, they had to cut the experiment off because the guards had gotten so abusive to the prisoners. And the prisoners had gotten so, had moved into such a passive state. So conditions are so powerful for us. And if we are, you know, if we're blaming, it's like, I would never do that. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. So can another way to hold the view or a view around, it's not right for that to be happening. It's not right for oppression and racism to be happening. It's not right for so much violence, domestic violence to be happening. It's not that a way to hold that view is recognizing it is conditioned, that each person in that situation is living out their conditioning, and our work is in stepping into action around that is to move to alleviate suffering. That doesn't have to be coming from hatred or anger, but rather from the compassion of seeing, yes, if I let this person continuing to harm somebody, they're reinforcing their patterns. If I don't support this person getting out of this situation, it's reinforcing perhaps patterns for them too. So the movement around, you know, when a view, you know, when there's a view and it's right, you know, it's like, again, views are help us to navigate the world. And we don't want to just say, oh, views are a problem. But we do want to come into relationship with views that we understand those views and what else they trigger in us. So if a view of this is not right is triggering blaming and division and hatred in our hearts, is there a way that we can open to that? Recognizing that too is conditioned in our hearts, that movement towards hatred. And maybe seeing, can we shift to recognizing, even with some reflection, how might it be if I were that person, if I had lived their life, if I'd had their father and mother, how would that be? And perhaps shifting to a stance of compassionate action rather than action out of hatred. And so we don't have to drop the view that this is not right, but the relationship to that view and what the undercurrents that it taps into, that really, I think, needs to be seen. That needs to be known. So equally leading to suffering, aside from the view of it's not supposed to be like this, is it is supposed to be like this. It's the view that this is the way it's supposed to be. And likewise, you know, that view creates the, if it's like this, it means what? It means I'm a success. I'm lovable. I'm better than other people. The suffering around this view is much less obvious than the other side of the equation. When it's not supposed to be like this, often we are directly experiencing some conflict or some mismatch of our expectation and what's happening. And so we're actively suffering there. We're experiencing pain and struggle and aversion and confusion, wanting things to be otherwise. So when we recognize, or when it is, it is supposed to be like this, often there's not the direct experience of suffering. In fact, it feels just the opposite. It feels like, what a relief. I figured it out. This is the way it's supposed to be. So the suffering here, or the way this is connected with suffering, this view, it's related to what I was talking about before. You know, this view, like in the example I gave, this view I had in myself. Oh yes, this I'm a success. I can do things well. You know, the suffering in this holding on to that view, the suffering in holding on to the view of this is the way it's supposed to be, is that things change. And there's no way to keep it. There's no way to keep it going that direction. And so when it changes, we flip into the, it's not supposed to be this way. And so when I first started seeing this pattern of the, I'm a success, I'm good at this, and then how I would flip into the other side of it, to, I'm a failure, when things changed, you know. Originally, when I first started seeing this pattern, there was some part of my mind that thought, I'm supposed to be able to get rid of that side. I'm supposed to be able to not have the view that I'm a failure, that I'm bad at things, that I'm not a success. But this side, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to feel like I'm a success. I'm supposed to feel like I'm good at things. And so it's essentially like I wanted to take a teeter-totter, you know, and cut off half of it and not have the other end. But, you know, you cut off half of it and you've still got another end. So there's not a way, in a way, to have that perspective of I'm good, I'm a success, without almost having the flip side, without having some time when it feels the opposite. So what I found in that pattern, in looking at that pattern, you know, when I was feeling like, this is good, this is the way it's supposed to be, I'm good at this, there's a sense of, I've arrived, okay, you know, the sense of, I can stay here, you know, so a sense of a little bit of, I've landed, I've figured it out. What I recognized is I began to recognize that was a setup for landing in the other side. And what the exploration I needed to do was to begin to recognize and clearly know, feeling like I'm a success is what's happening right now. How does that feel? It's got some good feelings, you know. It feels uplifting, perhaps. It feels like you've got your feet on the ground, and yet there's also in it a little bit of a sense of, can I keep this? So a little bit of a sense of agitation, a little bit of a sense of, I've arrived, but because some part of our mind knows the law of impermanence. And so there's kind of that waiting for the other shoe to drop. And then when the other shoe drops, it we can land in the other side. And so sometimes, not always, but sometimes there are these two sides, you know, we have to our views. I'm a success, I'm a failure. I'm good, I'm bad. I'm right, I'm wrong. What I found to be helpful is to acknowledge not just the places where it's objectively suffering, but to begin to touch into what is it like to be in the space where it feels like things are going well. And feeling the little bit of tightening around that, the trying to hold on to it. It's not, again, it's not that we're trying to stop things from going well. You know, it's not that we're trying to put ourselves in a situation where we're going to be floundering all the time. But that attachment to, this is the way it's supposed to be, that's where the suffering takes root, the attachment to the view. And so can we be in the space of life is going smoothly right now, without identifying, this means I'm a good person. This means I've arrived. This means I'm a success. It's very hard for us to do this. It's very threatening in a way to let go of what we think of as positive self-view. And yet, you know, when I look at the people I most admire, the most respect, I don't have a sense of them being so puffed up with themselves. It's not that I think that they're going around thinking, I'm a really great person. In fact, just the opposite. It's the humility and the willingness to be present for their mistakes and to acknowledge them, that is what I find so beautiful. And so that, you know, beginning to look at what does it mean to navigate the world without holding on to any particular way that it's supposed to be, but instead seeing if we can ride the waves with some measure of equanimity, some measure of balance of mind. And so when they're suffering, sometimes it can be helpful to check in. It's just a simple question, having explored a little bit about views here and how they lead to suffering and how subterranean they are. We can just check in and ask ourselves sometimes, if there's suffering, what belief is happening here? What belief is operating? Sometimes it becomes clear. Other times it's not so clear. And so we don't have to dig, but just from time to time, beginning to be curious about what your views are, what your beliefs are. Sometimes they surprise us. Sometimes they're so obviously ludicrous that being seen, they just vanish like a bubble, because they cannot withstand the light of being seen clearly. They're just so ridiculous, some of our views. Other times we see views and we begin to recognize, okay, that view, that feels right. That feels true. When I was in the view, I'm a failure. Boy, did I believe it. I thought it was truth. And when I was in the view that I was doing well, I believed it so fully. It's like, yeah, I'm never going to fail again. I've figured this out. So another exploration around views is to begin to recognize, or beliefs in particular, okay, there's a belief happening right now. How much is it believed? Is it being taken to be truth? Sometimes I find that a simple tool around seeing beliefs is simply recognizing, oh, a belief is happening right now. Believing I'm a failure is happening right now. That takes it from the perspective, because, you know, when we're in that place, you know, at least for me, when I was in that place of believing that I was a failure, it's like there was a lot of evidence for that. It wasn't like it would just go poof when it was seen. It was like, no, you know, these things happened, and, you know, they're proof. It's proof that I'm a failure. So the mind often is not so willing to just say, oh, that's just a belief. It's not true. But because, you know, all the evidence points to the fact that it is true, at least the evidence that we're looking at, right? When we're caught in that perspective, we're not looking at or remembering the flip side of the equation, of the times when we felt like we were a success. In fact, all of those become invalidated. It proves, in fact, that that was ephemeral and it was not real. At least that was my experience. It's like all of that stuff, that was not real. This is what's real. So the recognition of, oh, there's a belief happening, feeling like I'm a failure, believing that so, that little bit of acknowledging, okay, believing this is happening in the present moment, believing that I'm a failure in the present moment, believing this shouldn't be this way in the present moment. If we acknowledge it as belief, there's a little bit of a door around the mind, in the mind, you're acknowledging what's actually happening in the present moment. There's a belief arising, there's that sense arising, and it's being believed. It's being taken to be true. So when we acknowledge that that's what's happening in the present moment, oh, I'm a failure. Believing that is what's happening in the present moment. The mind relaxes a little bit because it's in line with what's happening in the present moment. But it's also acknowledging, in a way, this is a belief happening right now. It like gives the mind a little bit of space to recognize, okay, it's a belief. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. It gives the mind a little space to not be quite so latched on to that view, quite so identified or clung to that view. To simply acknowledge it. This is a belief. This is what's happening right now. That one tool I found to be very, very helpful. I didn't find it so helpful to try to bring in the opposite view. It's like, oh no, I'm really a success. No, I'm really... That felt like it was just running counter to what was actually going on. You know, this is the way, you know, when people would tell me, you know, stand and look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself you're lovable. It's like, this did not work for me. But acknowledging, okay, believing is happening right now. And then acknowledging on the other side too, I'm a success. Okay, believing is happening right now. Again, this is not truth. So this exploration around beliefs helps us both have them become conscious. It helps them to be less clung to. So it brings them into the light of day and helps us to release around them a little bit. And sometimes it simply makes them, you know, just having them come into the light of day makes them vanish because they're so silly when we see what we actually believe sometimes. So we can't decide often when these views become apparent, we can't decide to simply stop believing them. And in fact, some of them, it's like, this is an injustice in the world. I don't want to stop believing that. You know, I don't want to stop believing that racism is wrong, that homophobia is wrong. It's wrong from the perspective of it's creating suffering, humans creating human suffering in the world. It's wrong from that perspective. It's in terms of the ethics of Buddhism is around what leads us towards less suffering. That is the direction we want to head. What leads us to more suffering, that's the direction we want to explore and begin to release. And so, you know, the ethics around Buddhism are related to suffering in the world. What leads to freedom, to less suffering? And so seeing oppression, seeing injustice in the world, from the perspective of Buddhist ethics, which way do I want to go? I want to act to alleviate that suffering, to try to change the conditions of the world. That doesn't have to come from hatred. And so, you know, to have the idea that all views need to go away or that all views are somehow wrong or a problem. No. But we do need to recognize them as views and begin to see which views support a movement towards less suffering, which views keep us caught, which views perpetuate suffering in the world. So there's only a couple minutes. I talked way longer than I thought I would, but just see if there's any comments or, yeah, use the mic.
So how important is beginner's mind in, you know, letting go of beliefs or bringing beliefs into light, you know, simply not knowing?
How important is beginner's mind in bringing beliefs to light? I think it's huge because, beginner's mind is the mind that approaches things fresh, right? It approaches things. And so when we are encrusted by our views, beginner's mind is not really available in a way. And so, you know, we can maybe begin to recognize, can I bring beginner's mind this sense of, well, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Can I bring that to a situation in which I'm holding a view or when I feel like there's conflict? Oh, maybe I don't know. I think it's usually helpful in beginning to reveal. You know, if we think we know, there's a view operating. So it can help us to reveal those views by kind of, you know, holding that perspective or seeing if we can be curious from the perspective of beginner's mind. Yeah, thank you. Anything else? I think I'll continue this topic because this theme of what we add, there's more. There's more that we add. So I've explored, you know, reactivity, some about views. There's even more I could say about views, but... Actually, the thing maybe I think I'll talk about next time. I'm away next week. I'm teaching a retreat. But the next time I'm here, you know, the whole perspective around Buddhist practice is that we hold a view to help us move towards freedom from suffering. And so that can seem a little bit, you know, in terms of exploring, views is something we add. It's interesting to look at. You know, I said some of our views can be actually helpful to move towards freedom from suffering. So what's right view about? And how can we hold that consciously, the view that helps us become free from suffering? So I think I'll talk about that next time. And then I'll probably just keep on this theme for a while. So thank you for your attention.